Hey Liverpool fans, have you seen the latest release? At Anfield Index, we've teamed up with Liverpool FC to announce that the brand new 24-25 LFC Nike home kit and anthem jacket are out now, and they're hotter than ever. The brand new kit pays homage to the legendary Rome 1984 side, featuring sleek pinstripe detailing that brings a touch of history to our modern game. Whether you're cheering from the cop or watching from home, you'll feel the spirit of the Reds coursing through every stitch. The best part? You can grab yours today. The new kit and training range are available in official stores, online, and through the LFC store app. Don't wait, order now and be ready to show your Liverpool pride and style. Get your hands on the new 24-25 LFC home kit and anthem jacket today. Let's make this season unforgettable. You'll never walk alone.
I'm Trent Alexander-Arnold.
I'm Curtis Jones.
I am Cody Gakpo.
Putting on the Liverpool top for the first time, it was a dream come true, and I'll never forget that moment.
The new LFC 24-25 season Nike home kit is out now.
Buy it today, along with our new goalkeeper kit and training range, at your official LFC stores. Online at liverpoolfc.com/store and on the official LFC store app.
You will never walk alone.
It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year.
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations. Forgotten. The history.
Vegas Golden Knights!
History.
Win.
We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Thanks for choosing this free Anfield Index podcast. If you'd prefer to listen to this or any of our other shows without adverts, then now's the time to check out Anfield Index Pro. With AI Pro, you can supercharge your entire listening experience. You'll not only get all of our podcasts without the ads, but you'll have them far faster with our quick publish feature available exclusively for subscribers. AI Pro also puts you in the heart of our sound studio, with an option to listen to many of our shows live and interact with the podcasters in real time as the shows are recording. Upgrading couldn't be easier. AI Pro is available on all popular podcast platforms, and we have our own apps for Apple and Android. Just head on over to AnfieldIndexPro.com and get started today.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the latest Anfield Index Under Pressure podcast. My name's Dan Kennett. We don't have Si this week. He is preparing for a cup final. Woohoo! So, yeah, Derby Ladies cup final. Keep an eye out for the results, everybody. But that means we don't have Si, but we do have the rest of the guys. I do have Dr. Bart's evening, Phil.
How are you doing, mate? You're right.
Well, I've got to admit, mate, I've been better.
Yeah. Considering a local boy like yourself, that's going to be a killer.
Well, I mean, 14 years in between away losses at Goodison, and it's still too soon. Okay, I mean, shit happens. And I do have, he's not Virgil van Dijk anymore, he missed a week. he's back down to being the Joe Gomez in the podcast. It's Hamza Kalitluna, sports writer at the Times. Evening, Hamza.
Evening. Yeah, I wish we were all preparing for a cup final, but just Si has that privilege, I guess.
To be fair, Hamza, you are more handsome than Virgil. And that takes some doing.
He's wearing a tie this week as well. Much better than mine.
Yeah, he's been off to interview somebody today in London. Ooh. I reckon with that.
You reckon with that combo one?
Yeah. Is it Amarim to Chelsea? Amarim to Chelsea? Is that what it is, Hamza?
And honestly, I don't know.
Right. Anyway, we are going to do the Everton game pretty much as normal. And then because basically West Ham game was effectively a dead rubber from all our perspectives, we're going to spend a short amount of time at West Ham. And then we're going to talk about our new manager, Arne Slot, for the last 20 minutes or so of the pod. But without further ado, this was always a horrible fixture, Bart, coming into it. I mean, we had a discussion on here when we were top of the league and favourites on the predictions models, that you said, I'm not having it, right? That these models cannot factor in the United and Everton games for Liverpool, United and Liverpool away. Oh, and here we are, the graveyard of our title campaign.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And also shout out to Chuck in Discord.
Chuck the Chuck.
He also said the same thing. He said, even when we're looking at this run game, we can win these games.
Yeah.
You've got United and Everton away. And as we know, when we were probably the best side in the world, those two fixtures also cost us the title. So, yeah, you're right. They will always be that way. It's like North London Derby used to be like it as well. Well, that's become a bit of an easier prey for Arsenal recently, although I don't think they've won as much as Tottenham as you'd think. But, yeah, there's derbies, there's local derbies in terms of United for us, and I don't think any other side in the league has that, really, when you're going for a title, that is. They have other derbies, but, yeah.
Yeah.
In the context of a league where you can't drop any points, it's absolutely crucial.
Well, especially after losing to Palace, yeah. I think even when we had the 136 wins and two draws out of a 38-game sequence, 110 points out of 114, the winningest run in English Premier League history, the two draws were Everton away and Man United away.
Yeah, that's what I mean. That's our best side probably in living memory. And
well, the best football is the best team of all time. No one's ever come close to 110 out of 114. Well,
it's true.
Oh, dear. And Hamza, had you made your peace with not winning the title after the Everton game?
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, without further ado, give us those teams, Hamza, then. Did you stay on?
Yeah.
And then the lineups.
The big news before the match, before the Everton match, was that Jota was out for 2 weeks. the bit of news that we probably least wanted of all the players, I think, it would have been him or Van Dijk, I guess, or Salah. It would have been the three that you didn't want injured for this particular period. That meant that, there's a few tweaks, but I'll run from the back first. Alisson was in goal, and from right to left, it was Trent, Konate, Van Dijk and Robertson.
First choice, back five?
Yeah, well, this is the discussion to be had now, because I think Simon raised it either on Discord or on Twitter or on WhatsApp, but it doesn't really matter where he did it, that the points per game is just higher with Gomez in. And that's, we've discussed this before. What's Gomez's role in the team? How defensively robust are we with him? Does he offer that much in possession? No, but what in terms of counter-attack and physical presence, as in preventing counter-attacks by inverting and offering a presence there, and just being a physical presence for defensive set pieces and that sort of stuff, we know that he's valuable in that sense. So yeah, that is a discussion to be had and maybe something that we can consider next season as well under the new manager. But yeah, so that was the back four. And to be honest, when you're looking at trying to chase the league and trying to win and be as aggressive as possible and taking the game to opponents, that makes sense. You'd still want Robertson, you'd still want Trent. You'd want them to get on the ball as much as possible. Robertson in particular was one of the better players when form dropped off recently. So yeah, you understand that. Contemporaneously, it makes sense. There's no big issues there. There's a discussion to be had, but I don't think there's some. You're not looking at the team and go, "Oh, Gomez not playing is a big error." It's rather, what do you want from the team? And I think it made sense to go with Robertson and Trent for this game. In midfield, it was Jones, McAllister, and Szoboszlai. That meant Endo was on the bench. So on what I just mentioned, if Gomez is there and Endo's there and they're both playing in field, then you probably got more than enough physicality, but not enough ball progression. Maybe pairing Gomez and McAllister is probably a bit better. Again, with this match in particular, you expect to be on the ball a lot because Everton sit back, they defend deep, they try and counter-attack. So you want an energetic midfield three to counter-press recover balls and be able to slip passes in between the lines. So you understand the logic there again. And the front three, Salah, Nunez, Diaz. Nunez down the middle, Salah on the right, and Diaz off the left. No sort of complaints here, I think.
Absolutely. And Bart's the Everton team. The narrative here is that Everton have become a good team since Sean Dyche stopped wearing a suit.
Yeah, so, potentially. The only thing I was going to add was Cody was out because his wife was pregnant. I think he was actually down to start.
Was he really?
That's what was kind of hinted pre-pod, so pre-game. So I know that it is what it is on the night, but I'm just noting that Cody potentially.
I'm not really sure. I think Everton would have quite fancied in the mood they Everton were in. I think Dwight, would have been a little bit up against them. The Dogs of War mode they were in. I think they would have quite fancied Cody Gap lining up against Cody Gap.
Versus people who miss big chances. Yeah, sure. But
just in terms of the general fight and the battle. Yeah.
But the Everton lineup for me, two changes for them. Godfrey comes in over Young and Gardner in for Gomez into midfield, which meant they had Pickford in goal. They had Tarkowski. I can't even pronounce the fullback Vitali
Mykolenko.
Mykolenko. There you go. I knew I could remember if someone told me. Braithwaite and then Godfrey, and then Young came on for Mykolenko after he got injured for half time.
And they're playing Decore as the 10, which tells you something, doesn't it?
Yeah, very, very much so. And we have five in midfield.
Three dogs in there, basically.
Three dogs in it, yeah. Gardner, I can't remember the numbers.
Guay.
Guay, that's it. And then Decore in front of him. And then you had two wingers in McNeil and...
So basically they're trying to get something out of Calvert-Lewin, McNeil and Harrison. And Harrison's has always been a decent player.
Yeah, And if you look at the average positions for the passing, they kind of did what Atlanta did. They avoided our middle. They went around the outside. They did different because when they got there, just looking to win a set piece, rather than Atlanta would look to get a quick move and score, they avoided zone 14, half spaces, didn't use any of them, just went around the outside and tried and nick a corner or a set piece, which is effectively worked pretty well for them. And it's just a slightly different tweak on Dyche's way of playing, I would suggest. But yeah, that's roughly where they are in terms of...
Did the pass, just before you come on to us and stuff, did the Everton passing networks and in your database show you anything in particular about their game plans? Was there enough passing in there to generate passing networks?
No, there was. I was just about to say that. The chain links, you know, I do chain links to give you a little idea about a pattern of play. They basically registered very low or low, which means that all 92% of their passing chains were below five passes.
Yeah.
So that shows you what they were trying to do.
Did any of the players have connections?
Oh, now that is a very good question, Darth. Let me just go to the that particular tab. Give me 2 seconds. Great radio. Yes, we had three players. So we had Godfrey with Harrison, Guaye with McNeil, and Pickford with
Calvert-Lewin.
Yeah.
Hey!
There you go.
That's brilliant. But yes.
So, and they're all just over the limit of a table of five passes. So the just to be in the table, it'd be five passes. Yeah.
Before we go into the early stages and stuff like that, do you want to give us the match summary?
The abridged because I really don't want to get into too much detail on this. No offense to anybody, but there you go. Rounded up at about 68% to us, and therefore 32-ish for them in terms of possession. Touches 898 versus their 435. It goes along what Hamza was saying. They didn't want the ball. Field tilt 60 versus 40. So interesting. Total shots 23-16. Penalty box shots is even pretty much 15 versus 14 in our favour slightly. 6 yard box is the killer. Again, they had four in the 6 yard box. We had none. In terms of big chances, I've got 6 versus 3. Maybe I should check that again, but that seems a bit high. Goals 2 versus 0. XG 1.27 versus 209. EPV, they created 0.58 and we created 1.27.
No, was six on FOTMOB?
It wasn't us, so I was right. Okay, fair enough. I thought I'd made a slight error there, but that's good. So they converted their threat to XG at 220%, and we converted at just over 150 at 164, which again is a bad trend that we've done in something like three out of the last five games.
Yeah,
we normally convert over 300% per game. That's a bad game for us. Pass success 88 versus 62.
Yeah, but another game where come on to this game was in West Ham is that. The game where the 23 shots for 2.1 XG, that's not good.
That's not good quality.
No, it's below league average shot quality again.
Yeah, it skews your models in terms of probabilities because the model suggests that we should have won the game 2-1, 12% because of the amount of XG we have, but actually the shot quality is not. And therefore, in terms of probability of outcome, should have been 57% to us to win and Everton were 19. which is crucial. Was they really? Yeah. Crucial on a Monte Carlo. So, but that is.
That's surprising. Considering it was 6 big chances to 3, that does surprise me on a Monte Carlo that it was that one.
This is the argument Si's been having all week with us in the chat, isn't it? A big chance doesn't necessarily mean high XG.
Yeah.
And a Monte Carlo's done on XG, right? So that's why I'm saying that this particular Monte Carlo is slightly skewed. When we come to the West Ham, I think it's a fairly fair representation of the game. This one, because it's based on XG, I can see why it's come out with it is, but actually when you look at the game in the context, you know, 23-16 shots and 6 big chances to 3, you're like, okay.
So if we look at the XG in the game of all the shots ranked, what were the biggest shots in the game?
I'm Trent Alexander-Arnold.
I'm Curtis Jones.
I am Cody Gakpo.
Putting on the Liverpool toffee the first time, it was a dream come true and I'll never forget that moment.
The new LFC 24-25 season Nike home kit is out now.
Buy it today, along with our new goalkeeper kit and training range, at your official LFC stores. Online at liverpoolfc.com/store and on the official LFC store app.
You will never walk alone.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
I don't need a VPN. I've got nothing to hide. This is what I used to tell myself before I hooked up with LibertyShield.com. Not only is my home internet now fully encrypted, but I can now access all the websites I want, whenever I want, and do so from absolutely anywhere. As a Liverpool fan, I love to know I can now watch every match, regardless of whether it's on UK TV or not. My Liberty Shield VPN makes sure nothing is blocked and guarantees me super fast streaming speed throughout that match. You can get connected right now with their software package, which includes a 48-hour no-obligation free trial and instant access to their apps for Apple, Android, Fire TV, PC, Mac, and Android TV. Or go a step further like I have and get one of their pre-configured VPN routers. These small but powerful devices allow you to easily connect every device in your home to VPN, making it the perfect solution for smart TVs, Mac boxes, and games consoles. Visit LibertyShield.com today and use coupon code AIVPN25 to get 25% off at checkout.
I'll have to go to my F3 tab for that. For us. So our highest XG for us in the Everton game was 0.58 at the Darwin chance.
Oh, wow, yeah, okay.
And then you've got Diaz, the one after that was 2.5. You've got another Darwin chance at 0.2.
And Everton's highest were the two goals, was it? Branthwaite and Calvert-Lewin?
No, their highest were Decore at 0.21, sorry, and Calvert-Lewin at 0.2. Okay. So
that's probably why, because Darwin chance is what, 0.6, did he say?
0.5.
Yeah. You can see what
that's going to show. Because, let's be frank.
Which is fair, to be honest. It was a 50% chance, definitely.
What did we say before off time in our chat? Probably should have been 2-1 up. We've played awful, but the two chances we had just before off time, you should be taking those.
Yeah.
That's the story of the season, right?
Yeah. Hamza, now I don't know, because you're so young, right? I don't know if you were around enough to know about Joe Royal in the 1990s and his Dogs of War against Roy Evans' Spice Boys. This was a throwback. This was unleashing the hounds of hell on Liverpool. And I think it's fair to say, Hamza, that we did wilt a bit under the physicality and everything else. And right from the very start of the match, it wasn't going great for us, was it?
I think there's two key themes to pick out in this match. And one is duels and the other is set pieces.
Yes.
But Jules, if there's one that's bigger than the other, I'd actually say Jules, even though both the goals came sort of from set pieces. Overall,
Everton, just hold that thought. Is that also remember, Jules can end in fouls, which is the story of this match, and then the fouls then produce the set pieces. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Yes,
connected.
In total, Everton won 54 fouls to Liverpool's 41, 35 on the ground to Liverpool's 26, 19 in the air, which is remarkable when you think of the personnel that Liverpool have.
Yes.
And what you expect from them compared to what Everton have. And, so if we go to Van Dijk, we can have a look. So he won two of his ground jewels, the two attempted and two successful. Mm-hmm. Won 9 of 12 aerials, which is a bit lower than he usually does. I think he's averaging, is it over 80% this season?
Which is like historically high.
You know,
that's his best ever, and I think the best in the league. 9 out of 12, I don't think you can have too many complaints with 9 out of 12. Mm-hmm. But the story which Ganks was saying to us in the chat was about the way that Everton were maybe taking manoeuvring Van Dijk, and he was getting very frustrated even from a very early stage, wasn't he?
Mm-hmm. I'll just give the stats on Konate as well. He went 4 of 6, so at 67% aerial duels. And 2 or 3 ground jewels. So 67% is usually okay for a centre back, but just for Konate, I think usually it's a bit higher. I think I haven't double checked that.
I think he's low 70s for a season.
Yeah.
In which case, the sample size means that you're probably not going to get low 70s. So that's probably around average match, right? It's just 2 or 3. I thought Jules was the overriding theme of the match, and Liverpool losing them, and that was evident from the start, and it led to the fouls. There's a high number of fouls in this match too, sort of abnormally high. I'm just trying to...
Everton won the foul count 13-6.
Thank you.
We had, what was the possession? 2/3 to 1/3?
Yeah.
And Everton had 2/3 of the fouls given to them, and we had 1/3 of the fouls given to us. So that is a story.
And the reason that works quite well out for Everton is because they actually have the highest share of XG from set pieces in the league of any team.
Yeah.
So not necessarily the best team at set pieces, but they create the largest share of their total XG from set pieces. It's 34%, which is massive. I mean, so if you think of other teams that are sort of known for their set piece prowess this season, take Arsenal, right? Because they've scored 20 goals from 13.8 XG from set plays.
Wow.
That's so their total XG from set pieces is just the as a share of all their XG from including open plays, 20%. Everton are at 34%. The next highest on the list is Brentford. And sorry, it's West Ham, who are 28% of their XG come from set pieces. Luton 27%, then Brentford. They're really, really high for creating their XG from set pieces, which usually is a sign to try and avoid set pieces where possible, but they're able to win fouls quite often, which works to their advantage. It's a combination of the duels, the fouls, and the set pieces. And one thing that anyone who's watched Sean Dyche's sides since he was at Burnley will know, that one thing he really likes to do is target the back post. It's quite different from most other set piece sort of styles, in that he's in swinger because he prefers using the in swinger where possible. He's actually pitched to the back post for someone at the back post to sort of stand up and head down.
Remember his Burnley team did score a goal directly from an in swinger at Anfield very similar to the goal, second goal here. They double teamed Alisson on that occasion, and they actually went directly in because he was double teamed by Tarkowski and Ben Mee. And here was Tarkowski back in the haunting us again.
Most teams, when they use the in-swinger, looking for the flick on at the front post and then attacking at the back post. But Dyche does it a bit differently. It's pitched all the way to the back post, where either someone can head it back across goal, or they can stand up and isolate anyone at the back post is often going to be isolated. If they're standing still, covering the zone, and someone's got a run on them, it's just very hard to defend. So, as you would try and do an open play Dice tries to replicate that in set pieces. So yeah, all those sort of elements came together, and I think that's mainly the sort of theme and story of the match.
I was just going to add that in this game, Hamza, just to back you up there, that on the graph I've got for breakdown of where XG is created, set pieces and corners, if you add those up, are over 0.6 XG, and they only produce 1.2. So again, yeah, it's about 50% of this game. And I think also the key little context there is you go to back post, you hit it across, your defending side have got a turn to face the ball. And if you're already expecting the ball to come across you and attacking, you can play and you've got that momentary second to be free and score. And I think it's a clever ploy from Dice. It's very simple, but it's extremely effective.
Yeah, and I think just expand on what you said, Hamza. So, I mean, you said we won 15 aerials as a team, but Van Dijk won 9 of them. Basically, if you look at the rest of the team, there were so many players with zeros, right? Literally, because Canati won. So, outside of Canati and Van Dijk, we won 2, and. If you look at the fouls on Everton's players, the most fouled player was Calvert-Lewin with 4. And then it was Everton at 13 in total. But all our fouls were committed by midfielders and forwards. So 3 by Jones, 2 by McAllister, 2 by Diaz, and 2 by Endo. And the killer was when the pattern of the game was being shaped, 2 of them were by McAllister in the right channel, in the defensive right channel. And 2 of them were by Jones in the defensive left channel. I don't know. I couldn't tell you if they were all on. I can't recall if they were all on Calvert-Lewin or not. And some of them were soft, right? It's fair to say, Phil. Right? Some of those fouls were soft, but they were buying them, and our midfielders were committing these soft fouls, and you know, creating dangerous situations for us.
Yeah, it's. We've spoken about how the forward is affected by going behind. I think the midfield, you get panicky to get the ball back and you make errors. And then when you're fatigued, you can't get around the pitches quick enough. And was McAllister 6, wasn't he?
Yeah.
He's not turning and running after players. He's not McAllister's strength. And that's probably, and then he was Endo. So it's probably you're asking for... they are potentially going to give up quite a high amount of fouls in this game because of the areas they're going to be in. But CJ and Dom should have performed better in that, should have been smarter. They're normally mobile players, they're normally smart with the fouls. But yeah, for the midfield not to effectively, what is it? The average win rate for a duel in midfield was 23%. So, you know, that's pretty poor, to be honest with you. You know, as a unit to not do that when Everton have put 5 in there with 3 of them being Dr. War. You just need to do better. And we didn't. We weren't good enough.
Well, one of the things you talk about, you mentioned Don there briefly, one of the things we praised him about in the autumn was the amount of duels he was involved with.
Yeah.
And he was barely involved. He barely wanted to get involved in the physicality in this game.
No, he's 50% for ground and 0 for aerial.
Yeah, but I think he had virtually, I think he was involved in the actual number of duels he had was very low.
Yeah, yeah.
But he was very low. And, but he was having, like, in August, September, October, he was often having 16, 18, 20 duels a game.
Yeah. Yeah, and in the Klopp system, we know that the midfield has to do dual function, has to help the attack, has to be a workhorse to prevent the runners into defence, right?
Yeah.
If they don't do that work, the defence get overexposed, they're already defending massive spaces, so it's easier to pick them apart. And that's not quite Everton's game plan, but the same pretends, you know, you end up with the defence being overloaded, they commit a foul, ball comes in the box and Everton get a chance to score. It's a different kind of way of looking at it. But if your midfield doesn't do the work of stopping those runners, stopping it earlier on and winning the ball back without fouling them, the defence is going to get overloaded. You're going to create more fouls in the final third, which is effectively the pattern of play Everton went for. It was disappointing to see, but I think tiredness, I know we keep saying it, but it's a real thing. It's a real thing that these guys are fundamentally, they're done. They're out of the field.
Yeah, overplayed, and everybody's fried.
We have no side beyond it telling you they're all red. They are. We've seen the charts in the chat. There's a shade of red in size fatigue in this. I've never seen before. Is that red? So it's crimson on a lot of the players who started this game. So and I know people will say, well, you're just making excuses, but it does when you have nothing left to give in a high intensity emotional game, and the opposition start like that. And there's a point you just like, right, I'm going to try my best, but they're just going to overpower you because they're playing one game a week for the whole season. they know that they can be up. This is a derby at home. They got an early goalish, I think, was it in the first 10 minutes or so?
Yeah.
And then it's completely in their game plan.
They had one disallowed in the first 10, but yes.
Sorry, yeah.
Hamza, now there's going to be people listening to this pod absolutely pulling their hair out, shouting, what about Trent, right? I don't think we've done the lineups, we haven't mentioned his name. And I think we need to talk about Trent generally and over the two games. And he got a lot of a stick online for his, the way he shit out, I think is the technical term in Liverpool, of some challenges in the Everton match. And his general positioning and where he, at times he was holding hands with McAllister, which is not a good thing, ever a good thing, really, for a midfield structure and stuff. How did you see the Trent role in these two games and generally since he's come back?
There's been moments where he's looked really good and he's offered, I think the first noticeable action that he provided this match was a quick pass to Salah. Yeah. And that was probably, and it was a Salah played it across the
field. It was nearly the pass of the season. It was that good.
It was excellent. But after that, I don't remember too many passes of quality from Trent. I think, as is often the case, when a player's out, you need to build them back up.
Yeah.
And there's just not an opportunity to build them up because Liverpool need to win. They need to pick up matches. They need to, it's high intensity stuff. I don't think it's been particularly good. I think there's been moments where he's shown his quality, and in those moments, he's still clearly head and shoulders just one of the best passers in the league. He struggled, and particularly on the set pieces. The second one where Dominic Calvert-Lewin's at the back post, it's quite an obvious ploy the way they work it, because Calvert-Lewin is hiding behind
Tarkowski,
I believe, and then just gets round, and Trent is a man at the back post and he doesn't attack it. That's quite poor. I don't think there's too much fun on that. That's poor defending. Usually we try and often there's criticisms of Trent that are disproportionate, but I think that's a fair one. He was poor in defending that set piece and on other set pieces as well within this match. But he's not at full fitness, but that doesn't quite explain why he's not defending set pieces properly.
No, and I know, and we agree. And he's another one at the moment. We're saying a lot of players are fried, but Trent's one who unfortunately was undercooked. And I think it's fair to say Curtis Jones has been horribly well below what he was pre-injury at Brentford. Same with Szoboszlai. He's been a shadow of the player he was up until November. Mo Salah's looked like a shadow of the player he's been for 7 years since Man United, but he still had a brilliant game, you know, some brilliant performances, you know, on the way. Well, maybe the City game was just passing, the passes, wasn't it, and stuff like that. Yeah. So a lot of the players who are coming back have really struggled and look completely undercooked, and everybody else just looks completely fried. Which is a nightmare combination, but...
No, 100%. The only thing is, I don't defend Trent for the first goal, by the way, but I would say he did have a key moment in the Nunes chance. He had a key moment for the Diaz chance. He also put a through ball, which Nunes couldn't get his feet sorted out with.
Yeah,
it all should in have the done. First half, should have done.
Yeah.
And he did the clip pass for Mo, which, to be honest with you, again, we should have scored from. It was a lovely move across. There's a thing...
What was his XT on your model?
Hang on, give me.
How high was it?
I just flipped off that page. You just called me back.
I'm testing you, mate.
I've got points highest in the team at 0.17.
Okay.
So for EPV, that's higher. XT will be higher for the game. So because mine's always slightly under because it doesn't include it and it includes certain.
I would have thought, honestly, that pass to Salah from where you played it from the right half space to Salah, you know, on the side edge of the corner of the 6 yard box. I thought it would have been higher that even on EPV, but there you go.
Have a look at what Opta's XT have given him for the game. So Opta's XT have set a high. They've given him 0.4. So again, he's highest in the team. So that gives you an idea of the difference between two models. As I said, Opta's XT is always higher. But the only thing I was going to say was, so that's for Trent in terms of his involvement. He has looked fried. He's also it's unfortunate that the moments of brilliance he's providing are going to players that are also fried, right? So it's not a great combination to say, but yeah, no,
yeah, okay. But I think it's fair to say there's quite a large gap between his on and his off ball.
Yeah, no,
that's being kind.
That's being kind. I think the second goal, I would say, when I first saw that, I was like, what's going on there? But they moved Van Dijk out of the way.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So do you know what I mean? Whereas Trent is still there, and I've heard some people criticise Trent for not defending it, but they moved Van Dijk out of the way, and Van Dijk would have got that quite easily with the header if they didn't do that. And the first goal as well is really scrawny. I mean, Ali actually gets half a body on it. Do you know what I mean? It's not the cleanest hit. On another day, Ali saves that. He collects it off the post and we're going away. But yeah, it's unfortunate. On the rewatch, it's not any better, but it's still, you look at the chances we had in that first 45. And I think earlier in the season, we would have scored a couple and we'd be talking slightly differently, but it's not that.
So Hamza, just in terms of the chronology of the match, Everton think they have the first shot early on, they shank it wide, and then they think they got a pen. And I think this is a bit of a slightly fortuitous overturn for us. Is this a bit of luck? What do you think?
Let me just pull it up again.
He's offside. He's definitely offside.
He's definitely offside, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Unless Hamza's going to tell me differently. I think he's definitely offside. I think it's the right call.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Okay, and then we get Trent's big moment, and then Everton take over after we have that really after Trent's sublime pass, and then so Salah does the right thing, right? He squares it across the box, but then the Everton defender just gets it back and somehow scoops it wide. To be fair,
yeah, it's a really good clearance. It's quite a difficult situation to defend, and he does quite well to get ahead of Nunez, and I think there's another player there as well.
Yeah, as he's coming in the back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Curtis, he does quite well to squeeze it, get in between both of them and get it away. But yeah, when Everton take the lead, I think we spoke about this a while ago, but this is like quite a major trend now. So since the start of last season, Liverpool have conceded first on 32 occasions in the league.
32?
32.
That's going to be about 45% of matches.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Wow. This season, and in total, of those matches, those 32, Liverpool have won 9, drawn 11, lost 12. This season, they have had 16 matches where they've conceded first. They've won and drawn 6 each and lost 4 times. And it's really interesting, right? So the amount of times that Liverpool have actually scored first is 18. And that is the 7th most in the league, which is just peculiar for a team that is third and was in the title race. As for comparison, Arsenal have scored 27, which is the most, and City have scored 22 times, as in to open the scoring. As we know...
And I think that's going to be fairly... What Arsenal got is going to be fairly close to what we were in the title season when we won the game. We won the league after 31 matches, and I reckon we scored first in at least 26 of the 31.
Mm-hmm.
That would be my guess off the top of my head.
And remember, so you just mentioned we won the league after however many matches, but we won the matches within 25 minutes,
don't,
right?
Yeah, don't.
Early goals. So I'm just going to go through this.
No, it's just painful.
I'll go through the stat that Si mentioned before about the goal difference by period. So Liverpool minus 5 for the first 15 minutes. Then for the following periods, they are... 4, 7, 7, 8, 20. The 20 is the final period, and this includes added time as well, so that's why it's a bit bigger. That 20 period is the most of any sort of 15-minute chunk of any team in the league.
Wow.
But yeah, minus 5 is the second worst. Only Sheffield United have a worse difference in that period. But the goal that Everton scored came in the second period, which is where Liverpool have 4 goals. As we know, you take the lead, that makes the game a bit easier for the team in the lead, and the team that's trailing has to take on more risks, makes them a bit more susceptible to counterattacks, all that sort of stuff. We know that. But what I actually want to get into is the actual share of time spent winning and losing.
Because
that links to actually the intensity sort of stuff. So when City and Arsenal rack up goals in that last period, in that period at the end, so they have 8 goals. This is City, sorry, and Arsenal have 10 goals in that final 15 minutes of matches. Mm. But what they're usually doing, it's already 2-0 or 3-0, and they're just racking up an extra goal. It helps with goal difference. What Liverpool are doing, they're playing the full 90 minutes because they conceded first. They're trying to get level, and they're trying to win the match. They're not just trying to add an embellishment to a settled scoreline. They're actually trying to win. And that intensity has been the characteristic throughout the entire season. So 90 minutes for Liverpool is just 90 hyper-intense minutes, in the way that 90 minutes for Arsenal is probably 30 intense minutes, and the rest where they're seeing the match out. Mm. So when we think of the players in the red zone in terms of minutes played alone, I don't think we even realise that the intensity of these matches is even higher. So when these players are returning to fitness as well, and Liverpool concede first, suddenly they're in for a really, really intense 60 minutes after Everton score, because they're trying to chase the game. And that's, I think, what is essentially killing the players, and which is why the team have sort of ran out of gas towards the end of the season. And if you look at the time spent winning, Liverpool have spent 33% of their time overall this season winning. Arsenal spent 45%. Man City has spent 49%. Imagine you spend half your match winning, right? It becomes a lot easier to manage compared to just a third. In terms of drawing, so when game state is level, when you're in a precarious situation where one goal can just change things, Liverpool has spent 49% of the time drawing. Arsenal is 43%. City 41%. And in terms of losing, City have spent 11% of the time losing, Arsenal 12%, and Liverpool 18%. And there's actually, I think it's five teams who have actually spent more time winning than Liverpool, which is totally bizarre when you remember that third. And 2 weeks ago, we're in the title race, and 3 weeks ago, we're top of the league. The idea that the team top of the league actually aren't actually winning matches for very long, and that there are five other teams that win matches more than that are winning matches in time terms more than them is pretty bizarre. However, there is one cool stat that's a bit of a gem. When Liverpool do concede first, they win a lot. There's only 3 teams this season that have not dropped points when scoring first: Liverpool, Man City, and Fulham. No one will get that. But yeah,
no one will get that.
The nub of the issue here.
Hey guys, it's Eddie Gibbs from Anfield Index here. I hope you're enjoying this podcast, and I'm sorry to call time on the show before it ends. In the current climate, it's tougher than ever before to offer podcasts for free. At Anfield Index, we produce over 75 free shows every month, which I'm confident is unparalleled in the LFC sphere. Whilst we'd love to offer everything for free, the production costs now make this impossible. That said, we don't want to follow the model of other channels and lock all of our content behind a paywall. So what we've decided to do is to continue offering every show for free, but cut that offering to 30 minutes on our longer shows. So to get all of our shows in full and enjoy the best of everything we have to offer, we really hope you'll consider supporting the channel and signing up at AnfieldIndexPro.com. For about the price of one cup of coffee, you'll get every podcast in full with 0 ads. You'll also get access to our LFC VIP community, where you can enjoy live podcasts, engage with our podcasters, and chat with other Reds in real time. So that website again, AnfieldIndexPro.com. Join today.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
I'm Trent Alexander-Arnold.
I'm Curtis Jones.
I am Cody Gakpo.
Putting on the Liverpool top for the first time, it was a dream come true, and I'll never forget that moment.
The new LFC 24-25 season Nike Home Kit is out now.
Buy it today, along with our new goalkeeper kit and training range, at your official LFC stores. Online at liverpoolfc.com/store and on the official LFC store app.
You will never walk alone.